Let's turn to that great chapter, Isaiah 53, and look at verses 4 to 6. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray, we have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. If you had seen ships, numerous ships crossing the channel on the 26th of May in 1940, you would have realized, perhaps, that there was something wonderful and remarkable happening. I suppose some people might have looked at that event and just seen a lot of boats crossing the channel. Others might have realized that it was the evacuation of Dunkirk and a crucial episode in the Second World War when our armed forces were evacuated and brought back to Britain. Others would have seen it as a critical moment in the salvation of this country from oppression. So people would have seen things in a different way. And when people look at the cross of Christ, they see it in a different way. Often people only see the surface of what happened. And as this passage reminds us, his origin seemed so ordinary, his appearance so unimpressive, his life so sorrowful. And people may wonder about who he really was. And Isaiah asks us two questions. Who will believe the story, the account, the report of a Messiah who suffers? That is not what people expected. And the second question is, how can the arm of God be revealed here in a suffering Messiah? Well, Isaiah 53 opens up the window to answer those questions. It tells us that he was exalted out of sufferings and because of sufferings, that the nations of the world will be cleansed through his sufferings, and that God's arm is, in fact, revealed here in all its power and glory. And then behind the seeming obscurity of his origins and the ordinariness of his appearance lies an amazing mystery. His sufferings are the complete remedy for human sicknesses and pains, human sin, human folly. They are God's answer to our deepest need. Now, many of those needs that we have are felt needs, aren't they? Here we are told that he took up our sicknesses and our pains. That's the literal translation. He took up our sicknesses and our pains. We all know what it is to be sick. We all know what it is to suffer pain. Well, he took the sicknesses and the pains to himself. They're felt needs. We are marred and our lives are spoiled and our happiness is affected by these matters. We know what it is to be disappointed, to be grieved, to have pain, to suffer disease, to be burdened. But he has borne all of that. He has carried our sicknesses and our pains. He's lifted them onto his own shoulders. They became his burden. You remember how in the Gospel of Matthew, this passage is actually quoted in that connection. Jesus healed people of their illnesses, their diseases. And then we are told in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 17, that was in fulfillment of these words, these verses. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our illnesses and bore our diseases. Was there healing in the atonement? The answer to that is there is no healing ultimately without the atonement. It is because of Christ's sufferings that we one day will be rescued from ours and one day delivered from the pains that we bear. People don't see that, however. He trusted in God, they said. Let him deliver him if he will have him. They said, he saved others, let him save himself if he is the Christ. They cried out, crucify him, crucify him. They even thought that he deserved all that he experienced. God had smitten him. That was the verdict people made of Christ. But the truth is completely different, which is why the word surely is so important at the beginning of verse 4. Surely. You remember how in his wonderful oratorio, Messiah, Handel expresses that so wonderfully. Surely. It's not just an affirmation. It's an explanation. Surely. He has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. That's what happened. That's what was taking place. So there is healing in the atoning work of Jesus Christ for us. And that's an amazing and wonderful thing. These burdens we carry day by day and experience day by day, he has borne. The things we are aware of, he has borne. Our felt needs. But then there are other needs of which we are not aware. And these are the ultimate matters that affect us all. We are not aware, for example, and first of all, of the depth and nature of our sinfulness. We just don't know that. We don't realize it. It's as though to talk about it is to live in another universe. But this passage reminds us of what sin really means. It uses four expressions, four words. The first is the word transgression. He was pierced for our transgressions. Now, transgressions are the outward acts of sinful conduct, what we actually do in our lives. The externals, if you like, or the way in which we cross God's boundaries in our conduct, in our actual living, disobeying God's laws. The word transgressions means that. But why do we transgress God's laws? Well, it's because of the second matter that is referred to here, our iniquities. There is within us a crookedness, a bentness, a perversity. So the inward nature of sin is that which expresses itself in the outward transgressions. And we transgress because of iniquity, because of this inner twist, this inner curve inwards that is in us all to selfishness and to self-centeredness. The third word that is used here, well, it's not actually a word, it's an idea and a concept that is implied, is our enmity against God, because we are told that the chastisement that gives us peace he bore. So if we are not at peace, we are at war. And we are at war with God. There's this radical, deliberate rebellion in the heart of every single human being against God the Creator. So it expresses itself in many ways, as we know, in alternative philosophies to the truth about God and other things as well. So we're at war with God. We're anarchists. We're rebels. I know we don't believe that, but it's true. When it comes to God, we break his commandments. We don't love him. We don't serve him. We may not even acknowledge him, may not even believe in him. And we certainly don't please him by the way we think and behave and live and our attitudes and so on. And our desires are contrary to his will. We are enemies of God. And the fourth expression used here is one that really brings us to the corruption or the disease in human life and in human conduct. This radical sickness is, we read that he was healed, that we are healed through his wounds. So we need to be healed. This sickness, this infection, is a little bit like sepsis. It can get right through your system if you're not careful, or like cancer. It can destroy you. There's this process of disintegration and death that is taking place within our human personality. Now, these are things we are not aware of, but they're true. We don't know why we get sick, why we suffer pains, why we die. But the reason is because of this basic fundamental human condition that we all have before God. And the wonderful thing about the gospel is that God has provided the perfect remedy for that, for those particular matters, and for the illness, the disease, the corruption, the bent nature of our lives, the enmity that we all suffer from. And the wonderful thing here is that Jesus Christ, the Messiah, was wounded, or as this translation puts it, was pierced for our transgressions. The Bible speaks about five wounds of Jesus, doesn't it? It speaks about that bruising of his body, those wounds that we would call contusions, when the rod was placed upon his back. And then his flesh was lacerated when they put a crown of thorns upon his head. And then you remember how his body was perforated when the nails pierced his hands and his feet. And those terrible wounds of laceration and penetration were added to the contusions that he bore. And then the perforation of the nails was followed by the incision of the spear into his side. These five wounds mean that he was violently violated in his body. Why was that? Well, he was wounded for our transgressions. These external wounds that he bore in his body were in order that our external sinful conduct, the transgressions, might be removed, might be healed. He was wounded for our transgressions. Mine was the transgression, but thine the deadly pain. But he was also bruised, we are told. Bruised or crushed for our iniquities. This inward bent, this inward crookedness in our personalities, in our lives. He bore the iniquities, the actual inner sinfulness of our natures. He bore that upon his sinless soul and body, the weight of our iniquities. And they crushed him. They were imputed to him. He had none of his own. So he not only suffered passively by being wounded for our transgressions, but he also suffered actively as our sin bearer, as our substitute, taking this inner crookedness to himself. This is amazing. This perversity that we all have within, he has taken that to himself. And he was crushed because of it. Crushed for our iniquities. The passage also speaks about chastisement. The chastisement that brings us peace. Now, chastisement, as we all know, is a family word. It's something that happens when children are chastened by their parents, disciplined. And we who are rebels, we who are aliens, we who are enemies of our great Creator, have an elder brother. And the elder brother, who is part of the family and head of the family, has taken the rod, has taken the stroke of the father, has borne the wrath of the father, that he might propitiate the anger of the father for the rest of the family. And as a result, we have peace with God. We know God as our Father in Jesus Christ. We are brought home. That is what it means to become a Christian. We are brought home. We not only acknowledge God as our Creator, but we are brought home to know him as our Father. And that is through the chastisement that our Lord Jesus Christ bore as our elder brother on our behalf and in our place. By his stripes as well, we are told here in the fourth place, we are healed. Now you think of that. The remedy for our radical sepsis, this spiritual cancer that is at work within our spirits. This sin that affects our bodies and ultimately causes our bodies to die. The curse, what the Bible calls the curse, that came into the world as a result of the sins of Adam and Eve. The curse we are all suffering from and are under. He, Christ, became a curse for us. He died our death. He took all the effects of sin and the sin itself to himself to remove the effects of the curse in our lives, in our bodies. The one person at the crucifixion, or at least involved in the crucifixion story, who ought to have appreciated this more than anybody else, was Barabbas, the criminal, the murderer. And our Lord took his place, literally. But the Lord has done that for us. He has taken our place. And his wounds, his stripes, his sufferings cause our whole personality one day, including our bodies, to be removed from the painful, awful results of sin. So salvation includes our bodies. And these bodies of ours get old, don't they? They get weary and tired, and we suffer aches and pains and illnesses and sicknesses. And we have to visit doctors and hospitals. We know all about that. The body in which I live, the body in which you live, needs to be healed. Well, how is it ultimately going to be healed? It is ultimately to be healed through the stripes that Jesus bore, through the sufferings that he endured. So it's with his wounds that we are healed. I think I might have mentioned here once before that lovely incident in the life of Professor Werner Wright, who was professor of Assyriology, professor of rheumatology, rather, and arthritic complaints in the University of Leeds. And Professor Werner Wright had a patient who came to him suffering from chronic and sometimes acute arthritis. And he came into the consulting room and Professor Wright examined him, and the man said at the end of the examination, "Can I take one of these little leaflets I saw in your waiting room, please? And I'd like to read it at home." "Yes," said Professor Wright, "it's designed for patients like you. It's something I'd like you to read." So he went away and came back for his, I think it was 6 monthly appointment. And he came into the room, still obviously crippled with arthritis, and sat down and said to Professor Wright, "I want to tell you that I've been healed." But he said, "You're still suffering from arthritis." "Oh yes," he said, I still have arthritis, but I've been healed." The Lord had come to him, the Lord had rescued him, the Lord had saved him. And a Christian is somebody, if you happen to be an arthritis sufferer, and I'm one of them, who carries arthritis with us and will do until the grave. But it's wonderful to know that we've been healed, that we've been ransomed, healed, restored, forgiven, and that one day all these arthritic complaints and the others as well will be gone forever, because Jesus Christ has taken our place and borne our sicknesses, our sorrows, our crookedness, our enmity, and even our diseased life, and one day will completely transform it into his glorious likeness. This is why the gospel of Jesus Christ is the only answer to our real needs. There is no other answer. There are many people who will talk to you about your symptoms and will try to alleviate them helpfully, but nobody is ultimately going to cure you. There's only one person who can do that. None but Jesus can do helpless sinners good. That's the glory of the Christian message. It's the heart of the cross. It's what we will be remembering this Easter. The question is, have we seen it? Or do we just see the externals? Have we seen into the real mystery, the real meaning, the real glory of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ upon the cross? Because very often we are not just blind, but we are silly. All we like sheep, we are told here, have gone astray. Well, sheep are experts at following each other and not following the shepherd. That's a sheep for you. We are like that. We don't follow the shepherd, we follow each other. We imitate each other, we follow the fashions of the world, we are concerned about peer pressure and so on. We all, like sheep, have gone astray, and the sad part about that is that we've gone astray from God, the shepherd. Everyone, all, no exceptions. We get lost, we wander. We're in danger. We're incredibly foolish, though we think we're wise. And at the very time of our folly, the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Handel contains that wonderful contrast wonderfully, doesn't he, in the Messiah. All we like sheep have gone astray. That's a dance tune. Here we are merrily dancing our way to a lost eternity. All we like sheep have gone astray, dancing away. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. The contrast in the music echoes the contrast in the truth. Merrily dancing our way to hell, and the Lord has done this. How foolish we are, therefore, not to turn to him, not to trust him, not to come to him. The good shepherd who gave his life for the sheep. The great shepherd who now lives to feed and care for his sheep. The chief shepherd who is coming to give us a crown of righteousness at the last day. This is the glory, the wonder, the splendor of the Christian message. And it is central to every sermon. and central to everything we have and believe and love. So we are to realize our true condition. We are to remember who we really are before God and confess it. No special pleading, no excuses. Like the prodigal son, I have sinned. We are also to remember and glory in the love of God, that for people like you and me, in such a thorough mess, God has shown us his love and given us the total remedy for our sinfulness and our sins. And we are to come to him. We are to believe the report, the message. We are to see that the arm of the Lord is revealed here. There is power, we used to sing when I was a lad. Power, wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb. And then go out and tell the story. Tell the message. Live it. Live it in holy lives. Live it in grateful lives. Live it in evangelistic love and concern for our friends and neighbors and family, that they might come in with us. Come in. That's the message of the gospel to sinners. Come in. Come into the feast. All kinds of people are there. Mary Magdalene is there. Peter is there. Paul is there. Lazarus. That little man, Zacchaeus. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. They were all sinners. But they all came in. Why don't we join them? Why don't we come in with them and trust in the name of our mighty and glorious Redeemer, Jesus Christ? Whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved and safe. God, give us grace to swallow our pride, to humble ourselves before him, come, as we said to the little ones, into his arms.